Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wake up in the morning feeling like
Waterman is extremely well. She's very slippery.
You don't own me.
Okay, now the tough question.
Is this a try? Yes or no?
Just because I'm a woman.
Hello,
friend. Hello, friend. Jinx, personal jinx. You can't talk until I say your full name.
Have you been talking to my 8-year-old godson? Because
I've
literally this week, I didn't know that jinx was still a thing, but it obviously is, because this has become the bane of my life. He started talking like a beat behind you so that he can try and do it. And now they've got a new one where they go, lock in jinx, something else, toxic jinx. And interestingly, you just said you can't talk until I say your full name, whereas he says it's you've got to say someone's name 3 times.
Obviously, we are spirit animals, William and I. You know what, when we play Jinx, I haven't done Jinx for a long time, but I haven't talked at the same time as someone for a long time, because normally I wait for them. I'm polite. Anyway, I kind of did it on purpose because I wanted to be the starterer of the pod. And no. That's how you introduce it.
You're not the pod starterer. You can finish, but you don't start it. I am the gatekeeper of the
The thing is, even if I do,
I notice there are weeks where you start it and I just chop that off the top. So this word.
I was going to say, you can just edit me out anyway. I'm sure you'll be very, very surprised to hear that Jinx got very aggressive in the Waterman household growing up. And if you spoke when you were under Jinx, it was dead leg, dead arm time. You were in for a bit of a beating because it was taken seriously.
I love how these things stick around, how it gets passed down through school and the little things. You used to do, you'd draw a little woman in your hand and a squiggle on the other side, and you'd do, hey, Maggie Thatcher, throw her up and catch her. Squish, 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 here's Maggie Thatcher.
No, I have never heard that.
Yeah, I used to do that. And did you used to do, you'd write on your knuckles, THIS, and you do this is, and then you'd name the thing on your hand.
No, didn't do that. We just did the, you know, when someone does this and spreads their fingers and then the other person interlocks, and if you open them up, it looks quite gross.
Gosh. Open the gates, pick some flowers. How many have you got? You've got 10 boyfriends.
No, I feel like Wales is a totally different level.
Oh, definitely. Should we move on from playground chat to perhaps more serious matters, as opposed to taking 20 minutes to talk about rugby that we have done in the past few weeks?
Feel free, my friend.
Well, I mean, not to get heavy quickly, but I feel like we didn't talk about it last week because we were in a situation where the news is very much just breaking about the group action concussion.
That is quite a big jump.
Yeah, it's heavy. It's heavy. It's early doors. But I don't want anyone to think that we didn't talk about it for any reason other than it was very much fresh and coming out the day that we recorded the pod. And I think both of us are in a position where we never want to leap two-footed into something when it's not 100% clear what is going on with a story. I think this week we've probably got, there's a lot more column inches about it. In fact, it seems to be the kind of main talking point in rugby, which when we've had a European weekend and we've just come off the back of an international window, feels very strange that we're talking about something off the field. But perhaps this is going to be a watershed moment for the sport, because this is obviously a huge issue, and one that isn't going away, despite perhaps huge strides that World Rugby have made with protection of players in games. Recognise, remove the laws around players under a certain age. But this is obviously an issue, and I think it's something that we're all learning more about. It's something that I think we probably all had. Certainly, we think we are educated on, but there have been things in the past week that I certainly have been really shocked by. And I know that you said that you'd read Jess Hayden's article on Rugby Pass and had found it really illuminating.
Yeah, like, I think from my perspective, all of this, it's difficult to form opinion when, like, you're trying to sift through what's fact, what's research, what's opinion, what's emotion. And I suppose the biggest thing for me, and the article that Jess has written, is the huge disparity once again with the lack of research in women's sport and women's rugby in particular. And that doesn't surprise me, I know that, like, in so many different areas. But I think what I hadn't quite realised, or maybe appreciated, I think is probably the right word, is the huge difference between male and female rugby players. And, you know, she talks about how there's different types of concussions in men's rugby to women's rugby, and a lot of the women's rugby ones are around whiplash, which is significantly linked to neck strength. Now, I know that, you know, interestingly, neck strength was something that Graham Smith brought in with England. We used to have these head harnesses, and honest to God, it was the funniest thing ever when you saw, like, one of the front rowers in this, like, horrendous, like, old school scrum hat with, like, weights hanging off their necks. And then we'd do, like, prehab exercises, and all of us would be like, what are we doing? Like, this is rubbish. Like, I'm just pushing my hand against my head. Like, but actually, they brought in protocols and educated us slowly about it. And I suppose maybe, like, I was fortunate because that was at the right top end of the game. And Jess is talking about grassroots and actually just any woman coming into rugby. And I think the positive side around significant reduction in neck strength is that neck strength can be trained. It's like, you know, we look at ACL injuries and we recognise that women are more potentially susceptible to them because of glute strength. What do? We can actually train it and we can improve it. I think the part of it that I've read little bits of, I've heard little bits of information on, and I don't have an opinion on it yet because there's not the information, is around the kind of impact and implication and symptoms of concussion. I think that that's something that if women are different to men, how can we recognize and respond and react if there's something that's different? And I think, yeah, that's something that was, I suppose, I want to know more about. You know, are women more susceptible to strength? Right, okay, we need to change it. Is it a technical thing because they're coming into the game later? Is it a physiological thing that actually, you know, there's some part in the article about, like, how our brain is formed as a woman compared to a man, like, all of that. And I suppose the crux of it is that it's a significant lack of research. So how can we find out more stuff about women away from rugby? And I know you've spoken about, like, how we've chatted, your frustration that rugby isn't looking outside of,
yeah,
of rugby.
It's something that I think, you know, I'm not a massive NFL fan. I like NFL for the Americana, and I like it for the technology.
And the kit.
And the kit, yeah, I love NFL stash. I truly do. I'm not being sarcastic. I love lots of things that, weirdly, in a kind of off field scenario that they've done. And the rules around training in the NFL are really strict. I'm not sure that everyone's aware of this, but you, when you begin your, like, pre-season training, you are only allowed to start it on a specific date. And that date varies depending on whether your coach coached you the season before, or if you have a new coach, you're allowed to start 3 weeks earlier. You can start on the first Thursday of April, as opposed to the third Thursday of April, things like that. But one of the big things that they've done since, you know, obviously there's a Will Smith film called Concussion, I believe, which is about the class action lawsuit that took place in the NFL about CTE and head injuries. And since then, they've made huge strides. Now, we have to accept rugby, American football, horse racing, all of these sports carry an inherent risk in participation.
Football.
But the point here with the NFL is that they are reducing the risk outside of match time. So you know that there is a risk of suffering a concussion in a game for whatever reason, and that's the same across many sports. However, in the NFL, they have now limited the training time. So there is no contact training for the first, I think, 12 weeks of preseason. Within a normal week during the season, you are allowed to have 3 days of training. You have 2 3.5-hour sessions per day, and only the morning sessions are allowed to have contact training. They're not allowed to do any contact training in the afternoons. Now, the skill levels in the NFL are increasing year on year. It's not like we're seeing NFL go backwards. The NFL gets better every year. Games are better. The way that they play is better. So there can't be an argument that by reducing this, you're going to bastardize the game, which is, you know, what we are going to get from some quarters. I have been really frustrated by seeing men of a certain age and a certain ilk commenting about how the game's going soft because of these things. And I just think, you can think that the game is going soft, but the game is going to be extinct if we don't make changes soon. Because regardless of how those of us who are involved in the game and love the game feel, there are more, we are a niche sport, and there are more people outside of it who are going to pressurize things to change. And if we don't change, if we don't look at what we can change to make things safer for people and make it a more palatable sport, then it's not going to exist in 15, 20 years' time.
Yeah, no, I obviously, you know, I love rugby and I love everything about it. I love the contact side. But as a fullback, I didn't do as much contact training as the back, as the rest of the backs, or actually the rest of the forwards. You know, when I think about some of the sessions we've done, when it's like you're practicing defending your own try line, picking goes and stuff. Obviously, I was as far away as possible. When you got caught in, it's like, no! But like the repetitive nature of it is tough. And it's a, you know, sometimes used as mental resilience as much as physical resilience, as much as technical and tactical. Like there are other elements that we use contact training. And I think the learn from NFL and where we need to get the balance, and this is where science needs to come in and step in. And we don't do things because we've always historically done it. We do it because we know that this is right, is around the physical robustness of collisions, and at what level can you train it without putting yourself at higher risk of those little knocks and bangs. Is actually using a pad any different to going bone on bone, like that type of thing. The timing, the duration, and I think I heard somewhere that they're only allowing 16 contact sessions in the NFL outside of, and so they strategically place those contact sessions, and I think, yeah, all of that needs science. Just going back to the article that Jess wrote, fascinating to the round the neck strength was something, it wasn't even to do with rugby, but it's something that we maybe need to look at, is that women, she says that women are 17% more likely to die in a car crash because of neck strength. And at the same time, there's a way, and she's like, a kind of a proof point is that, you know, women hold a lot less muscle. And that if you can put your hand, women, the vast majority of women can put their hands all the way around their neck, because actually, I mean, I've got tiny hands and I can still do it. Probably when I was playing, I couldn't, because I did hold a lot more muscle mass in my neck. I was a little bit of a Dorito box, but I've lost a lot of that now. But actually, you know, I think those like little things kind of, I don't know, just triggered. That's why I thought it was a really nice article, because it was really clear. It brought in different examples, different kind of, you can visualize that, you can physically, as a woman, you can do that around your neck.
Actually, one thing that I've talked about on the pod before, and obviously you were very aware of it because I actually was staying with you in the weeks afterwards, I had a bump in the car last year and I hit my head on the window, and I didn't realize they were concussion symptoms until you kind of said to me, you've probably got a concussion because the way you feel. But Jess Hayden also did an interview on 5 Live with Nikki Campbell, and she talked about how the symptoms of concussion in a woman are being really, really emotional. Now, I've worked in pro rugby since I was 17 and have been surrounded by men suffering from concussion, and it's not necessarily a symptom that they suffer from. Whereas I couldn't get through the day without bursting into tears. I was so emotional. I felt so upset, and it's because I had a concussion. And again, you know, I think that we are going to see change. And if that means adopting things from the NFL, then absolutely fantastic. But again, kind of going back to what you said earlier, let's not apply a one-size-fits-all approach to this. Let's look at the differences between men's and women's rugby, men's and women's physiology and medicine. And it's something that I bring up all the time. We all know, everyone who listens to this podcast knows that I'm a very passionate feminist. But something, when we were at the World Cup, you and I...
But mate, this isn't about feminism. This is about just who's playing the game. This is about men and women play the game. And actually, we have different makeup physiologically. So...
But it's the right of men's and women's bodies being different. And that's something that isn't recognised enough throughout health, fitness.
I don't think you need to be a feminist to support that. I think, you know what I mean? I think it's just common sense.
No, I agree, but then you say it's common sense, but I don't think people are aware of that. When we were at the World Cup, I had a conversation with a cardiologist from Dublin. We were on the beers. It's when we were in the hotel with a few other people. And I said that I was a passionate feminist because of the difference in the way that men and women are treated by medicine. And he disagreed with me about it. And I said to him, okay, you're a cardiologist. What are the symptoms of a heart attack? And he stood there and told me the symptoms of a heart attack. But the symptoms that he described are the symptoms of a heart attack in men. The symptoms of a heart attack in women are very different. And very few of us realize that. And that's why so many women have heart attacks and they go undetected. And he turned around to me afterwards. He said, I've never thought about that. The only time I describe the symptoms of a heart attack, I describe them as the symptoms of a heart attack in a man. And I was really happy that I'd like had a conversation with somebody who was in that point, who realized who's like, that's his job. And it's not that he doesn't care about women, but it's just the nature of how medicine works. And that's where I hope that, you know, the article that Jess has written, and it's been retweeted loads and it's had lots of traction. And I'm really glad that a platform like Rugby Pass is giving somebody like Jess the platform to put that article out there. Let's, you know, do this side by side, but let's recognise the differences that women's rugby and men's rugby have and will need to have to make this safer for both.
And just to kind of wrap it up, I suppose what thing that women's rugby can really benefit from is, you know, the point in our game, the point in professionalism where we're starting to see significant changes at the elite level of physicality. You know, the club game now is going up to where reasonably close to a test match level, probably 5 to 10 years ago, you know, we're seeing in the Premiership now, because of the nature of more women having strength and conditioning coaching, more women having more time or giving more time to it. But I think that we're in a really important stage of our development of the sport, because as women get bigger, obviously the collisions are better, but actually if we can educate the training process around neck strength coming into that for everybody, the foundation, the understanding, the training that we're implementing in the week, as these women are getting more time available to them to put in to be professional, you know, actually have we been a little bit more protected in the women's game because we don't have training every day? I suppose the risk is that we play on a weekend. If you've got a concussion, if you're a professional player, you would rest. We would go back to work, and actually working might be a PE teacher, so you're out walking around and you're not resting your brain like you should do. Or it might be that you work on computers, and one of the worst things is screen time. So we've had it in a flip to the men. So I think that's to me what I'm super passionate about, is that we can use this as a platform to learn, to develop, to engage, and as women are coming into the game at a later stage, we give them, like we're talking, there's been talk by Alex Popham about making the age of contact training in and contact rugby older. Well, actually, if you look at when girls come in, they are older. So, you know, they are more functional, they're functioning at a different physical ability anyway. So, you know, so like, I think that we can learn from each other, but we're in a really good place to push on. And this is scary times for rugby, and it's scary times for players. You know, Matt Dawson has openly said in his Five Live interview that he is worried, and there are players coming forward. It's awful. It's harrowing. It's really, really sad for them, their family. Are we going to see more? Of course we are. But I feel like if this is done properly, we can learn and make the game even better and even more accessible. And that, to me, is brilliant.
I think the concussion story is going to rumble on, obviously, for a while yet. But on the field antics, we actually got to see each other on the weekend because we were both working Bristol Claremont.
I know, from a little distance, gave my tryhards friend a wave. And then you got to hear my dulcet tones for the whole game. Sorry about that.
Because all I could hear, it was one of those games, because there were 12 tries, all I heard was the director just like, okay, VT, where are we going now? It was insane. I can't remember working on a game like that. I tweeted that it was the kind of antidote to an autumn of not much excitement. That game just made everyone like, yes, this is what we needed.
Although I don't think it's what Bristol needed, because within the first like 3 minutes of the game, they were 21-0 down. Like, it was mental, the start. I think the problem is when games, like, as a newbie commentator, well, getting more experienced, when there's so many tries so quickly, you like go into this like panic mode of there's so many things to talk about. Where do I even start? But Clermont, you know, the style of rugby they played, the way that they shifted the ball, the fact that Matsushima, who was class in the World Cup, getting to see him in Champions Cup debut and getting a hat trick was brilliant. And although I was a little bit brutal, because at halftime, Jamie Heaslip and I were talking about like who would be the star of the match, and he was like, Matsushima's got to be up there. And I was like, they were just run-ins. He was like, mate, you can't say so. I was like, I can. He has to earn, like, as a fullback, he's got to do more for me than just catch the ball and run in. And actually, on that, I spoke about who ended up getting the man of the match. The two centres for Clermont, Moala and Nang Langevelu, I can't remember the pronunciation of the 13th name, but Moala at 12, he was literally like a wrecking ball. It was like seeing Bastereau back in his day, who has gone to play eight, but we'll talk about that in a minute, because we'll finish off on this game, because Moala was amazing. And actually on the touchline, Ed Jackson, who was reporting, said he heard some of the Bristol boys shouting, because obviously, like, with no crowds, you can hear what's going on. And they were like, shift it to the edge, mismatch, shift it to the edge. And it wasn't. It was the wing and two centres. They're just so huge. Yeah. They were like, they thought they were forwards. And then when they did shift it, it was like, boom, city, and got absolutely smashed.
And I can't remember working on a game like that for a long time. And it's when you're working, like, in the truck in production, you don't, it's quite difficult to follow like the editorial of a game, because you're literally just looking at certain angles of things happening. So if you'd held a gun to my head at half time, I wouldn't have been able to tell you what the score was. I was just like, no, there's been a lot of tries.
And we were I reckon you would have.
No, I couldn't. And because the camera angles that I was working with, I had like the hide behind. So it was just insane. So it was really, it was fun. And it was nice to kind of like, again, feel like European rugby can ignite some excitement in fans more so than international rugby has done. I still have got an issue with the structure of this tournament, and the two-legged quarterfinals doesn't make any sense to me. A round of 16 will keep this pool stage more interesting, because we know what French rugby teams are like. The top 14 is more important than Europe to them nowadays. As soon as they're on the receiving end of a loss, they're not going to continue to fight for this tournament. Equally, if you've got a French team versus a non-French team in a two-legged quarterfinals, if the French team was to lose at home in the first leg, I'm not sure they'd even get on the flight for the second leg. So I think there has been I don't think they've perhaps structured it as well as it could have been. It doesn't make sense to me for the two-legged part to be the quarterfinals. It would have made more sense for that to be semi-finals if they didn't want to keep as many teams in it up to a round of 16. But there we go. The reigning champs got off to an absolute flyer on Sunday as well.
And there was crowds at Sandy Park. There was actual drums, real life kind of cheering and hollering down the West Country.
And, you know, I loved it. They're just like, you could tell that the Chiefs boys were just loving it. And they're not going to, it's not going to be a kind of like one season wonder for them with their name on that trophy. One thing I really loved is I was actually in the car, so I was listening to it on Five Live. So BBC Radio, Five Live Sports Extra take the BBC Radio Devon coverage. So that across the whole country. And at half time in the match, they stuck with the BBC Radio Devon coverage, and they played in Susie Appleby's interview from the Exeter Chiefs women's game on Saturday. They did call them ladies throughout, which grates on me, because we don't call it gentlemen in the men's game. But it was just, it felt like proper platforming of women's rugby. It wasn't like, oh, and well done because some girls played here yesterday. It was like, this is what happened in the Exeter Chiefs women's game yesterday. And Susie's interview was brilliant as well, because it was, the interviewer was a little bit kind of, oh, you know, a good performance at the end. You were screaming to the girls to get the ball off the pitch for that losing bonus point, you know, like a plucky kind of loss at home, but a great, you know, start to fans at Sandy Park. And she was like, yeah, but it's not what we want. We want to win every game. And I just thought, yeah, this is like, don't get a pat on the back for turning up. This, you know, this is serious. This is a,
yeah, but you know, if you know Susie, you know that she is literally the most competitive person in the world. So anything other than winning and smashing people is just not on her radar. I actually got to catch up with her last week, which was amazing. She's one of my, you know, longest friends in the game, having coached me and supported me from my new age of 15, and just a fantastic woman. And I chatted to her and Patricia Garcia, because Patricia's coming, has come over from Spain, and she's delivering their Centre of Excellence and Academy. So they just talked to me about like priorities and things to do. And it was just really nice to knowledge share with two people that get it, two people that I have a huge amount of respect for. And also they have a huge amount of respect for the programme that we've delivered at WASPs, and they want to learn from that. And I actually think that knowledge sharing is so important if we're going to get as many future Red Roses prepped up and into the Premier 15s as possible. So yeah, it was really lovely to see her. And she was on a dog walk, because she was like, and phone was moving around everywhere. Just typical Susie, but it was awesome.
The other thing we mentioned is,
hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Is in the Leon game on Sunday.
Oh yeah, Bastro 8.
Bastro 8.
What I love, can I just say what I love, is the fact that it was just so weird seeing him in the like line out. But obviously you see like players. Anyway, he scored this try, which came from a line out. It was like I think that there was some like loop play. It hit in through the centres, and then he ended up scoring in the middle of the post, like a line of a centre. So he did like the forwards role and the centre role in the same thing. I mean, they were playing kind of what was pretty much Gloucester's A-League Academy boys, and so some of the tries were a bit of a walk-in. But to be fair to Gloucester, they scored some decent tries and can hold their heads up. Like, if they were out for a potential shoeing, and they stayed in it. But yeah, Bastro at 8 was it's brilliant, because I just love that. Like, why not? Why, like, Vicky Fleetwood, perfect example. She is a front row. I think she's. I definitely think though she is potentially the only person in the world to have played under 20s centre, England seniors, hooker and back row, and test level, international level sevens.
It's amazing.
I mean, she's a freak, but
she is a freak. She is a
Anne has a six pack better than most of the sprinters we see at the Olympic Games. I mean, she had, and actually, I think she did. I think it was England school. She did England school level. I think it was hurdles. She was an athlete as well. Yeah. Dad's an athletics coach.
Have you ever moved position? I'm not talking like full back to wing or anything like that at like international level.
I've got my first cap at scrum half. No, but funny.
Game, have you been like named on a team sheet at like 15 and then had a little scurry down to scrum half or anything like that, you know?
When I got first capped, I was scrum half. And then I was playing wing at Bristol or Clifton as was, because Susie was the scrum half, so I played wing. That's actually how I started off on the wing, because I was behind her with England and I was behind her at club, and it meant that we both could play. I remember early doors in my career, I was on the wing and we were up at Murrayfield. That was the chip packet story when the place was empty. Anyway, Yappy, who was our captain, Joe Yapp, who is the most like calm, nice person, basically got so fed up. There were so many fights. It was awful. The game was horrendous. And she kicked out a player that grabbed her ankle at a breakdown. So she like kicked out and got yellow carded. And basically, as it happened, I was playing left wing. And I was like, I basically ran into the huddle. I'm such an idiot. I ran into the huddle and was like, don't worry, I can play nine. I've got it. And they were like, yeah, okay, Nolly, of course you're like the natural like nine to like replace her. Anyway, afterwards,
like they nine in like a suit pressed on the chest.
Oh, it was so cringe. And afterwards, like all of them just hammered me. It's okay, Nolly's here. I've got it. I can. It's so cringe. In the same game, I dropped the ball over the line, so maybe I just was a stinker. Scott, it was a hell of a line break.
Like coming in saying that as well, like you're the only person on the field who's thought that you're going to play at nine. I better let them know that even though I've played nine at this level before, I can step in.
You know what? So that was 2005. And then kind of over the years, I played more on the wing than I ever did at scrum half. I was kind of there as like third choice because there'd be a replacement on the bench. If I was starting, and then in 2009 I moved to fullback, and that was when I like really started to own the 15 shirt. And 2010 World Cup, we were playing Kazakhstan, and there'd been some injuries, and basically I think it was Alice Richardson had got injured. She was playing 10, which meant that Katie had to play more minutes, which then meant, well, she needs to rest. So they brought in Latoya, who was the scrum half. So there was like this big movement, and they were like, okay, Nolly, you're supposed to be rested this game, but we're going to put you on the bench and you're covering nine. And I was like, I genuinely, the day before, remember with Streety going out, was at Surrey Sports Park, going out and doing a scrum half session. So I was like, I can't remember how to play. And I was practicing my nine passing, and I was like, and honestly, so we did this couple of passes, and I was like, oh, they're all right. And in the game, there's this one shot, I don't know whether it's there. I basically make this pass, and I'm like delayed by a couple of seconds because I'm like, that was a decent pass. Oh no, I'm playing nine. I've got to run. I've got to get to the breakdown. And I think I only played about 10 minutes and I was absolutely exhausted.
It is one of these things where like people moving positions does underline how specialist positions are in rugby, and how there are certain positions who will have no concept or idea what other people on the pitch are doing. And the best example of that, that I can think of, is when Johnny May had to pack down on the flank and absolutely no idea where he's meant to put his hands at scrum time. And
he held around Mako's ankle.
Yeah, it will never get old that but the worst thing about that is that on the one hand, like, it's hilarious, but it's the fact that like Johnny May got absolutely hammered for it. And the fact that he put his hand up and was like, no, I'm going in, I've got this. Despite the fact that he had absolutely no business being there, no idea what he was meant to do. But
he's a lot bigger now as well. So the weight that he's got now, he definitely didn't have then. So it's not like he's adding weight. You know, it's interesting you say about positions, because I think some players can, and they can be that, you know, Austin Healey type of player. Like, and everyone, I remember early on in my career, like actually talking to Streety, and he was like, I don't want you to be a jack of all trades in terms of positions. I want you to specialise in one, and we need to make sure, because you can play different positions, yeah, we're not moving you around. And I think that's when I kind of really started to own the fullback shirt, and also realised I couldn't actually sprint for longer than 10 metres. So it's probably not ideal me being on the end. I needed to be the person before. And I had quicker girls outside me to do that. But one thing that people don't realise is, you know, when they're like, oh, I'd chuck him on the wing, or like, you know, oh, fullback, that's the same. It's like, no. Like, fullback is more of a playmaker. You know, you're in first receiver, you're dictating defensive positioning, you're managing so much more than a wing does. A wing will be frontline. But then the other thing is that there's a huge difference between playing 11 and 14. And yeah, everybody always would be like, okay, so you'd put your meatier, like, bigger winger on the right, because they would be the person that would do the back row moves. It's yeah, so funny, right? And on the left would be your faster ones, because you could pass the ball to them quicker because they're coming off your right hand. It's so ridiculous, right? And I know that people still use those things, but the reasoning. But wingers pop up everywhere now, right? So they're coming all through the field. But actually, if you really regularly play one, to then move on to the other side, it's like playing in like mirror. So it's like playing in it's the weirdest thing, because your angles, people think they're the same, but it's a different angle when you're coming in off a different side. It's really, it's hard to explain until you're in it. But for anyone just chucking someone on the wing, maybe just see which side they, and actually would recommend to play both as early as possible. I did, which then helped me play fullback, because it meant that I've had a viewpoint from both sides. And then, like, getting a bit weird and quirky. Can you remember in 2003, Clive Woodward brought in the eyesight training? I don't know that you've ever heard about all of that. So basically, he talked about, like, it was like the whole 1% things that he brought in. And there was this whole visual training where you'd develop your peripheral vision, you'd develop your focus, all sorts of, like, really cool activities to do it. Because I did a test, and I had an electric car that I would have to, what are they, you know, like a handheld thing. Car. Yeah, that's the one. And they were like, right, this is the cone on one side. You've got to drive it to the same distance on that side and then flip it over. So there's this like depth perception as well. And it got to the point where everybody has a stronger eye. So you have a lead eye, you have two big ball eyeballs, but I'm not quite sure which one's stronger than the other.
My left eye is my better eye.
Okay, well, but one works on depth, and one works on vision. So they do have different roles depending on who you are, and you can do it by little test by putting your hand in front of your face. Anyway, but to the point where if I was left eye dominant, then it would be better for me to be on the right wing, because I can see and I can perceive things differently from that side. Now, that's not necessarily the case in the elite game now, because you're coming off your wing and you're actually coming in.
Drew Mitchell, who played in the 2015 World Cup final for Australia, can only play on one wing because he's blind in one of his eyes. He's got no sight in one of his eyes.
Oh, there you go. And so to the point where it's not that...
So, like, there's not going to be, like, pick him on the other side.
Well, and also, then you've got Jodie Ansley, who is profoundly deaf, and actually where you play her and how she plays and... the communication and stuff like that. Yeah, it's fascinating. Like, I love all of that stuff, and people maybe don't think it. And if you coach grassroots rugby, I'm not saying you need to test people and put them only in that position. I am not saying that. I'm saying that there's loads of fascinating things that are being, and I don't think the strength that the sight training it wasn't carried on. It was something that the 2003 boys later.
I was aware of, and I haven't thought about, but I obviously don't have very good eyesight, and I have really poor depth perception because I have a very severe astigmatism. So
is it also because you're quite short, so everything you have
so because you'd like actually a bit nicer to me, because this, you know, is a real struggle for me in life. But I can't parallel park both ways, because I cannot, my eyes won't allow me to judge it. I can't park to the left, I can only park to the right. And it's something I really struggle with. It's also the same way, I know this entertains you, it entertains a lot of friends who see it. I can't, if I look at two escalators, unless there's people on them, I don't know which direction they're traveling in. So, and I find it very hard to get on an escalator. It's like watching a dog trying to get on, because I'm not quite sure when to release my foot and put it on there. And I'll often end up putting one foot on and then doing the splits because I'm not quite sure if I'm on or not.
And there were some funny stories of us in Tokyo with those same issues in the world's busiest tube station in Shinjuku, backing up thousands of people. Hang on, wait, which way? I'm like pushing you on. Anyway.
Enjoyed, they did not enjoy. Talking of Tokyo, oh my gosh. So Nani's Laureus Move the World Challenge, when it was first set up, she specifically
October 19th.
What's the deadline on this? Have we got until the Olympics to get our people moving and cover the distance? Because it's a huge distance. When you told me, I was like, this is a ridiculous thing that she's picked, because I'm not quite sure that you visualized how far it was. So October 19th, so less than 2 months, the Sevens family who signed up to Nolly's Move the World Challenge have got to Tokyo. Their mileage combined has got to Tokyo.
9,566 kilometres, and we've smashed it. And people are like, no, I've set a goal to get to 300. I've set a goal to get to 500. No, and they're like, no, I'm carrying on. And I text Lee McKenzie saying, like, you know, thank you for her support and promoting it. And she was like, I'm gutted, it's finished. I've really enjoyed it. Aww. And so I'm kind of maybe thinking, do we come back from Tokyo? We're there. Yeah. Do we come back? I'm not sure. But you know what? We raised over £1,300 for Laureus, which might not sound loads, but actually it is. It makes every pound count. Yeah, and I think that it wasn't a fit. I put a target of £1,000 because I thought, you know what, if we can all just kind of chip in. I was thinking if we can have £1,000, that's £10 for 100 people, and we got 102 people involved. We got £1,300 raised, and we smashed it. And a shout out to a few people. So James Harding, who I'm linked to through Wasps Legends, who sponsored me a few years ago, he got in touch and donated £100 and also has done nearly 500 kilometres. Sven Glore has done nearly 1,200 kilometres. He is mental on a bike.
Such a try.
Ultimate try hard. Phil Aiken, my friend who I'm working with at the moment with Micah, he's like done something every day. He's chipped away at it, got his boys involved. He's even done it on a in a kayak, like loves it. It's ultimate. Wasps ladies have donated loads of kilometers together. We had the Mother Ruckers, Guesty got all of her family involved. Just did so many people. I can't keep it. Like, I'm sorry if I haven't said you, but I'm blown away that we managed to achieve it. Really, really chuffed.
And it also, I think the big thing for me is the reasoning behind why you chose that. I really hope that it has put a spotlight on the men and women who are trying to get to Tokyo for the Sevens next year. Perhaps it's been like overlooked by certain people, but you know, we've delayed an Olympic Games and they're now in a situation where financial hardship is going to hit them, and because of the loss of contracts, but they ultimately want to get there to represent us. So if we can support them in any other ways in the lead up to this Games, we will, won't we?
Yeah, and it kind of shows that there's a massive value of, you need a catalyst and maybe a reason or someone to just get something going, but there's a huge, huge value in our rugby family and also what we can actually achieve as a community. And I think that that kind of community spirit, you know, the charities that we've supported, they rely on community spirit with volunteers and people and funding and actually just, I think it just shows that you can contribute. It doesn't have to be huge amounts of money. It could be your time, it could be doing some activity, and I think I'm just really grateful for people to get behind me and just show, not for me personally, but like you said, it's for the bigger picture of Laureus and Sevens, which are super close to my heart.
I just wanted to mention before we finish today that there is a Christmas Scrum 5 on the 28th of December, because that would make sense if it was November, it would have been. and I went and did a shoot on Sunday with Llanelli Warriors, who are a mixed ability rugby team who this year have celebrated 25 years of existence and being there for people in the community around Llanelli and over the Lucca and further west.
25 years, that's 25. Amazing.
Yeah, it's amazing. It started off with there's a team in Swansea called the Swansea Gladiators. They were the first ones. They've existed slightly longer, and in 1995 they challenged a day centre in Llanelli to form a team and play a match against them. In their first year they played two games against each other, and it's still very much in dispute who the winner was. So they call it's still been very much disputed. And then in the second year, the Warriors were actually able to play at Stradey Park, which is obviously the former home of Llanelli Rugby. Now it's housing estate. But they played at Stradey and they beat the Gladiators. Craig Cornell went down to award the trophy because he was up his mum and dad's and saw that the floodlights were on at the stadium, so wandered down. But in the time since, the story is amazing, not just because of who they are and the service that they provide to a group of people who, especially in a year like this, are often overlooked in society and marginalised, but they've been on amazing tours. And the first tour they went to Tiverton.
But that's by my mum's.
I know. But since then, they've toured New Zealand and they've also toured Samoa, which... there aren't many international players who can say that they've done that. So the fact that they have...
that's class.
It's amazing. And I actually... one of the big things...
Have you just ruined all of your content?
No, because I don't want to give away too much of it. But I will say look out for it, because the Captain Richard tells the story that there's lots of things at the moment that we've moaned about in rugby, but it makes you very proud to be involved in a sport that's so inclusive. And I just want to say a massive well done to the WRU, because they are genuinely the world leaders when it comes to... like inclusivity at the moment, when it comes to people in society who perhaps are have intellectual disabilities, physical disabilities. But the WRU have put so much time and effort over the past few years under the leadership of Darren Carew, who himself lost a leg in Afghanistan serving for the army. He has done so much work, and now the WRU have got a visually impaired international side. They've got they've always had a deaf Welsh team, which have been so successful, but they have the Disability Six Nations at Ystradmennach, where I know you've actually had some experience, where you did some substitute teaching up there.
So when I graduated from uni, I was like debating whether I should do teaching, and PGCE and UICAF like offered me a place, and I was like, oh, I don't know, am I just doing it for the sake of it? It was like the end of a World Cup and that, and I was just like, ah. So I was like, all right, why don't I do sub-teaching for a year? Like, there's nothing worse than that. And I absolutely loved it. I found myself, I think I've told a few stories about going up to the Gurnos and being in a position that I actually could have taught my ex-boyfriend, weird, because he's 5 years younger than me. Anyway, that's odd. But yeah, I went to Ystradmennach and Trinity Fields for about 4 or 5 months, and I worked across the school, and it was just incredible. Like, it was really hard work, and opened my eyes to, oh my god, like how much these people care, like the teachers and staff. You know, there were 4 staff to 7 children, and they ran riot, you know, they were just the most incredible people. And one of my favourite people there, obviously I was kind of going to be more engaged with PE, but I was a bit worried about it, because I was a bit like, what can they do, you know, and not in a bad way, but just in a completely uneducated way. And the PE teacher there, and I forget his name, was just such a cool guy, because he was like, well, I'm not going to put restrictions on these people. It's up to them. And also their helpers weren't allowed to put restrictions on them. They had to sit on the side. And the kids said, no, I feel comfortable doing this. And they were, you know, children that I would never have believed could achieve. They were empowering themselves. They were up on this massive trampoline. They were doing all these cool things. And I was like, oh my God. And it just opened my eyes to the limits that I put on somebody, which was wrong. You know, I shouldn't have done that. And he just completely enriched my mind to how I coach, how I deliver, working with young people with disabilities. And then on sports day, It was the best day ever. And he was like, it was so much fun. It was complete chaos. It was like, we started a race and it was like dropping marbles. Like everyone like went everywhere. There was no light. It was just crazy. We had like parent carer races where they were wheeling their child. Got really competitive. I was like, okay, like hang on, like, calm down. And it was just brilliant to see how sport enriched their lives in a way that I hadn't appreciated or supported, because in concern that I was worried about them. And actually, I should, like, every value that we have from sport, of course, can go through everybody's lives. And that's why I love hearing about all the mixed ability rugby, because I'm like, yeah, of course rugby should be for everyone. Of course it should. And like that's done easily.
I think for me, there's obviously, for me, there's a very kind of personal side to it, in that I'm very glad that I get to tell a story on Scrum 5 that involves people who we wouldn't see on Scrum 5 on a normally weekly basis. The reason that's important to me is because, as you know, and whether many of our listeners will, I've got a very close family member who has Down syndrome. I was 12 years old when he was born, and I tell people all the time, when I was told that news, and I can remember being in the car when he was a day old to go and meet him for the first time, I was absolutely petrified. I was so scared. I was so scared they were going to make me hold this baby that had Down syndrome. I never met anyone in my life with Down syndrome. I'd seen them on TV. Perhaps I passed people in the street, but oh my God, I was so scared. And then I held this baby who 18 years ago just stole my heart and just has not given it back since. And it's been really interesting for me over the past few years to see that as a society, we are being more inclusive generally. And the fear that I had as a 12-year-old came from a place of not seeing people included in society who were different. So programs like this for the Llanelli Warriors are so important, because it shows that everyone has a place in our society and everyone can participate and give something and offer something. And I'm so happy that I got to wear a Christmas cardigan and be there on Sunday to watch them train after a really difficult year for a lot of them, for all of us. But yeah, it was just amazing.
And actually, got me thinking, a little shout out to Long Levens Rugby Club, who I met via Gallagher, who are shortlisted for Grassroots Club of the Year. They didn't win, unfortunately, but I met Rich, who's the inclusion manager, and a couple of players. They've got over 50 senior players. They've got interlinking with a couple of local special educational needs schools, and they've got an awesome program down there. So if you are in Gloucester, and I know there's a few people that listen from here, then make sure you pop along and see whether you can help out or you can be part of it. Or if you've got a young person or adult in your life that you feel like hasn't been included in rugby yet, the person that I spoke to, the player, he was just loving it. And he was like completely embedded in Long Levens as a club. They had a space, they were a team, they were, you know, they played, and actually some of them have gone through into playing into the mainstream club. And I think that transition is just awesome, and it just completely knocks down any barriers, educates people to the point where everybody can be involved. It just might look a bit different, it might sound a bit different, it might feel a little bit different, but different is great. And I think that, yeah, that a little shout out to them, because I just loved hearing their story. And I'm really looking forward to hearing your piece.
Well, what a nice pod we've had today. What are you doing for the rest of the day?
So I've actually got to pop into London, even though we are in lockdown. I have to go and do some work. So yeah, unfortunately we've hit tier 3 now, which means that there's no hospitality. There are certain things that you can do if you're a key worker or you do bits and pieces, but yeah. And then just getting over the last hurdle for the last few bits of work before I'm going to make myself have a bit of a break, from emails, from screens, apart from obviously, I'm sure I'll Zoom you. but I'm also commentating this weekend. I fly over to Dublin because we're covering Leinster Northampton, which hopefully won't be too much of a shoeing. Are you got a birthday hangover?
No, because obviously you can't buy alcohol in restaurants and bars. So we had a bottle of champagne with dinner, and we're going for an afternoon tea for my younger sister's 30th this afternoon. So again, no alcohol, but she's not much of a drinker. It's just my day that's ruined by that. So
well, have fun, my friend, and everybody else, enjoy the rest of your, maybe, well, this week. We're not at Christmas week yet, are we?
No, it's not Christmas week yet. Next week's Christmas week.
Okay, we'll give you a Christmas special next week.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Marc Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Marc.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.